It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 586 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's the return of two favorites here at the podcast. Mark Russell and David Whalen are back in two great interviews. First up, Mark Russell's back, and he's talking about his very first Kickstarter, and it's for Bunk Bed Mishaps. It's described as a book of cartoons by Mark Russell, appropriately enough. We discuss the book and how Mark put it together, then get into his comics including My Bad, Billionaire Island, Second Coming, and other great offerings. Be sure to back his Kickstarter after you listen to this fun conversation. Then everything wraps up with my interview with David Whalen from The Offspring. We delve into the latest news from The Offspring, which is described this way. Three friends coming to terms with their shared troubled past and emerging strange new powers investigate the sudden widespread disappearance of children all over the country. David updates us on what's going on in the world of The Offspring, and we talk about other comic-related things as well, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Warning, life is a baffling kingdom rich in lies and trivialities. The writer of that wonderful quote is Mark Russell, the creator of many good things, including a Kickstarter, your first Kickstarter going on right now for, I got to get the name right, Bunk Bed Mishaps, which always, that worries me right there. I mean, and the other good books that you have done. We've talked a little bit about Second Coming in the past. We've also talked about, Snagglepuss. I know so many people that love that series. Superman Space Age, Fantastic Four Life Story, all kinds of great things. Of course, The Flintstones. How could I ever leave that out? That was a great, great, great book. So how you doing, Mark?
Doing good. Thank you for the kind words.
It's good to talk with you, because this is your very first Kickstarter. Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, that would be great. And the reason why I'm kickstarting it is because this is not a book of my writing, which is what most people know me for. It's a book of my art. It's a book of my cartoons, to be specific.
Uh-huh. And how long have you been drawing these?
Well, most of my I drew between the years of, I think, 1999 and the present. So it's about a 25-year span. It's not everything I've drawn during that time. It's just selected cartoons from that time. And I feel like my cartoons are very different than my writing, which is another reason why I'm kickstarting it, because I feel like it wouldn't be fair to try to like go to my publishers of my writing and give them something that's radically different. So I wanted to do something that was completely new and fresh, and where people getting the book would be completely warned ahead of time that this is very different than what they've seen before from me.
People always get mad at me because I don't do this soon enough, so I'm going to make sure I get it nice and early with your conversation. This project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, May 4 at 11:52 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And actually, congratulations are already in order. You've already gotten your goal as we're talking.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. It's already been funded, but if you want a book, you can still get one. And if you aren't sure if you want a book, you can always go to the Kickstarter, and I've got some of the cartoons and the content loaded up on there, and you can see if it's the sort of thing you want in your life.
Well, I do have to say, some of them, the very beginning, is that the title page? It says Bunk Bed Mishaps on it, and there's a cat putting a pillow on top. Is that you on top of you?
No, it was just some guy. But yeah, there's the cover is a cat smothering a man with a pillow, because it felt like it was a good sort of visual representation of a bunk bed mishap. But the title is actually more about how it's symbolic of how
you know, like if you are jumping on the top bunk of a bed, the way your imagination might be, it will probably collapse, destroying everything underneath it. And so it is sort of a visual of letting your imagination run free on the top bunk.
Okay, cool. Because I was afraid it had to do with urinating sometimes in the bed, which...
Oh, you know what? I hadn't considered that possibility until just now. And yeah, it's probably a marketing mistake on my part, which, you know, this is what happens when you kickstart something instead of leaving it to the professionals.
Well,
you do it yourself, you're going to make urine references unwittingly.
I may be the only one thinking that, so it could only just be me. So maybe we'll leave that behind, and hopefully I'll be the only one thinking that way. So
that's why I'm not a marketing professional, folks.
It's described in here. It says it collects nearly 100 cartoons drawn over the course of 3 decades, as well as several mini essays in which I open up about my life and what was going on with me when I was drawing them. It's as close to a memoir as I've ever written, though most of what it captures is the danker recesses of my mind, which gave birth to these cartoons. I'd be lying if I said that I understood them or why I drew them, but it meant a lot to me to do so, and even more to share them with the world. And then you have some examples. And I have to admit, I don't get all of them. I'm going to have to, just like some of your writing sometimes.
That's okay. That says more about me than it does about you.
I want to make sure to get all that in there because they're
very strange.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm kind of on the, I tend to look at things, pretty much straight on, you know, instead of, so when I read some of your stuff, of course, it's like I said, the like Second Coming always makes me think. I have to. I think about the stuff that you're having Jesus do and other things going on in there, and the superhero too, and Sunspot, I think it is.
Sunstar. Oh, Sunspot's a better name. I should have thought of
Sunstar. That's,
Sunspot's really cool though. I wish I had thought of that. Can I steal that?
Well, you know, you can feel free to lift anything that I say.
All right.
Feel free. Anything that I say is up for stealing. I always am happy to help those people I consider more creative than me. I manage to come up with something that works.
Oh, good. I like to steal ethically, so thank you.
I don't get this one. Maybe you can explain it to me. The first one says, with what little dignity was afforded him, Marshall gathered the remainder of his plums.
Yeah, I don't know there's too much to get there. It's more like, you know, And I'm going to be embarrassed if I try to explain these. If I have to explain these as jokes, I'm probably going to fail. But most of them are just sort of sentences I thought were funny when they occurred to me, or images that I thought would make funny images. But I can't really explain them as a traditional joke with punchlines and whatnot. But yeah, it's very typical of the sort of thing that's in this book. I just admit it's all about men gathering plums off the floor.
I don't get that. What is that? I don't understand what that means. But oh well. The one I really get, the reticulated python is sensitive to cold, and the fact that he was never loved as a child. That I get. I get that one.
Okay.
Now there's about 100 of these cartoons in there. How many pages is in this book?
About 100. There's going to be 100, including some cartoons and those micro essays. So it'll all told, I haven't compiled it yet, but everything's drawn and written that's going to go into the book. So it'll probably be, you know, 96 to 104 pages when it's all said and done.
Okay, do you have them all done? So you're just basically assembling them now?
Yes, the content is already done. It's just a question of assembling them and putting them into a book format.
Is this like a hardcover, about trade paperback? How many different versions do you have?
It'll be a trade paperback on some high quality paper, some thick paper, so you can't see the cartoon on the other side of the page.
Okay, you get a signed copy, and you pick your pick of one of your other graphic novels. Like, I couldn't find a copy of Not All Robots. I didn't know you wrote a Judge Dredd series. How about that?
I did. And a lot of people don't know because I don't think anyone bought it. So if there's these rarities in my career that you are interested in collecting, you could ask for one as your reward if you do the Kickstarter.
I might have to go for that one. And I'm also intrigued because you got some of these high-end extra deluxe package supreme. There's one that's $500.
I like to think of that as like the sugar daddy package. You get all kinds of stuff with that one.
Okay, that's a really good one. You could also get cartoon artwork by you.
Yes, original artwork. It may not be the artwork that appears in the book, but you will definitely get original artwork.
Okay, and there's a deluxe package supreme for $200, which has several things there, and then again, more original artwork, and a signed issue number one of the series of one-shots you wrote. So there's all kinds of good ones. That's $200. That's more affordable. Then there's a $100 one, which has the Flintstones Deluxe Edition or three trade paperbacks of your choice. So you've got all kinds of good stuff in there. There's all kinds of books and stuff that you have done in the past. I don't see Second Coming in there. Is Second Coming in there as well, or just those?
It could be one of the, you know what, you could ask for any of the trade paperbacks I've done as part of the reward. So if you want Second Coming, I can get you Second Coming.
Okay, because that's a great book. So this is, from what I understand, you said in here this has been stuff that you've been doing for 30 years or so. Wow, did you do these kind of as a hobby? Is that how you started doing them?
Yeah, you know, I started doing them when I was when I first moved to Portland. I was working in a parking kiosk, and it was very busy in the morning, and then it would get absolutely dead for a long time. So I had to find a way to sort of fill the time. And I remembered how much I enjoyed drawing as a kid, so I tried to take it up again. And I found that I actually got much better at it, you know, sitting there in the parking kiosk with nothing else to do. I think boredom has always been a great sort of motivating factor for me. So I really taught myself to draw there. It was almost like living on a MacArthur Genius Grant, because I'd be very busy in the morning, and then I'd have like 7 hours to like read or draw or write or do whatever I wanted. And it was a pretty formative time in my life. So that's kind of where I started. And I've just sort of drawn these cartoons ever since.
I'm fascinated because I didn't know I don't know if you want to call it an artist or a drawer or how you want to refer to it, because that I didn't know you did that. I knew you were a writer. At what point did you decide between the two, or have you ever really decided? Are you an artist who writes, or a writer who draws?
I'm probably a writer who draws, if only by virtue of the fact that people are willing to pay me for my writing and not really for my drawing, because I'm not really good enough as an artist to draw like a comic book. But I'm good enough to write one. Although I will say I did make my debut as a professional comic book artist earlier or last year when I did a comic at Ahoy called My Bad, which I co-wrote with Bryce Ingman and with art by Peter Krause. But they did let me draw I did a page of like those old toy ads like they used to have in the backs of comic books, you know, with the X-ray specs and the sea people and stuff. They let me draw the page with all the toy ads. So I have actually drawn art in a comic book.
Oh, wow. I'm looking for that. I'm looking for that because I've got a volume 2 that I'm looking at. I'm looking to see that in there. I don't quite see it in there, but maybe I'm just zooming.
Yeah, it's in the first volume of My Bad.
Oh, that's why. Okay, so again, this is going to conclude on May the 4th. So you've got them all done already. You're just putting them together right now.
Yep. They're raring to go.
Okay. So that's good. That'll help out with that. So let's see. Do you know when you're going to be able to send them out after the project's done?
Yeah. I'm hoping to have all of the commitments mailed out by the end of June. So pretty quick turnaround for a Kickstarter.
How does this fit with your writing schedule and stuff?
Well, I mean, I will continue writing during this time, but the good thing about the fulfilling the pledges and sending the things out is that, you know, it's very different work than writing. So writing is kind of brain work, whereas in the evenings when I'm not doing anything or when I would be having fun, I will instead be
putting books inside envelopes and mailing them out to people.
That'll be good. That keeps you busy and productive, I guess.
You know what? That'll be fun for me because I'll think to myself, like, this is one more person enjoying my cartoons.
Very good. Very good. Lots of good stuff. I'm really fascinated to read these things. I got to make sure I sign in there. Do you have a digital version or are they all print?
They'll be all print. I'm doing that intentionally because I want them. What I really want is like have something, you know, sort of like that I can hand directly to somebody or that I can mail to somebody with a note, a more sort of one-on-one intimate experience than just like throwing it out there, not knowing who's reading it. I like the idea of like having something that's more sort of smaller print, but you know, this is something that means something to that person. It's something that means something to me to give to them. So I'll do like a limited number for the Kickstarter, and then I'll probably print a few hundred extra just to like take to cons, the conventions, to like give to people directly over the table when I go to conventions. Because to me, that's the best experience that I have as a writer, I think, in terms of engaging my readers, is when I can actually talk to them face to face and give them a book right there at the convention.
Well, that'd be cool. I usually ask this at the end, but why don't we do it at the beginning? Do you know if you're going to be going to a lot of conventions this year?
Not a lot, but I'm going to some. I'm going to be doing San Diego. I'm going to Grand Rapids Comic Con, and I'm also doing Heroes Con, and I'm going down to Brazil, actually, for the first time ever for CCXP at the end of November. I'm doing Vegas Valley in Las Vegas also in November. So I'm doing a few. Probably do New York.
Oh, I was going to ask about that. No San Diego?
Oh, yeah, I'll be at San Diego.
Okay, and New York too. Yeah. I always like to go to New York. Are you going to be in Artist Alley?
I haven't decided whether I'm going to do Artist Alley yet this year. I might. I should probably decide that pretty quickly. But, yeah, I love doing San Diego because I'd never table at San Diego. So, to me, it's a wonderful experience because I'm not tethered to a location and I'm walking around. I'm seeing people I haven't seen usually in a couple years. And it's really more about that, about seeing my fellow professionals and hanging out with people. And then also doing sort of going to like parties and stuff. It's the most fun con just because it's the least sort of business con for me. It's the one where I'm just sort of there to hang out and have fun with people.
You don't bump into other creators and set up any projects and stuff at San Diego, do you?
That happens too. It's one of the great things about going to the cons, especially in New York and San Diego, is that you run into other creators or editors and you talk about things you're working on or things you want to be working on. And a lot of times, you know, you come out of those, especially those two conventions, with, you know, a book, an idea or project that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
Oh, I love New York is my favorite. I love Artist Alley is just one of the most amazing parts of any convention that I get to because there's people are there to spend money. And I've helped on both sides of the table. I've helped people sell and I've helped people buy. And man, the stuff just flies out the door. It's just amazing in New York.
Yeah, no, New York's great. Like New York's great on every level. I enjoy doing the panels. I enjoy talking to people at the tables. And of course, you know, when the con's over, you're in New York. So that's great, too.
Mm-hmm. I always get a kick when if you're in the Javits Center, it's like completely different from San Diego. San Diego, the whole town is taken over by the convention. And not everybody that lives there is happy with you because of that. If you're in the Javits Center, when you go two blocks away, you are they have no idea the convention's going on there.
In San Diego, the convention swallows the city, and in New York, the city swallows the convention.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of fun. So this has taken 30 years to put this bunk bed mishaps together. Does that mean it's going to take another 30 years before you get a bunk bed mishaps too?
No, hopefully, you know, if this does well, and it looks like it's doing pretty well, I'll probably come out with a follow-up book next year.
So you're already doing more cartoons? Yeah,
this is not all the cartoons I've drawn. This is just a selection. So I'll probably do another 100 next year.
Oh, that'd be good. You probably get good at doing Kickstarters by then.
That's kind of my hope, is that like once I've done one and I've made all the mistakes on that first one that I'll get better at it. And it might just be sort of thing I do, you know, like every now and then, just do a Kickstarter, just to do a book that I've always wanted to do, but that I can't really go through traditional publishing houses to do. So it might, this, if it works, it might just become the way I sell those other projects that are sort of asterisks that aren't really marketable any other way.
Have you thought, though, about taking these to like a Hoy or somebody else who might want to print bunk bed mishaps?
I thought about it, but, you know, I felt like if I took it to a Hoy or one of the publishers I work with that I have a good relationship with, and it failed, which seemed likely to me, that I would hate to do that to them. I would hate to besmirch my good name with them by giving them a turkey, which is a very distinct possibility with this bunk bed mishaps. So I thought, well, if it fails, at least it will fail. You know, it'll blow up in my own backyard and not somebody else's. And if it succeeds, then, you know, I've done something kind of cool on my own, and I might just be able to publish these without using a publisher, which is kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about making a continuing story from cartoon to cartoon?
Yeah, I mean, I would be open to that. But these, I think I get that itch scratched with my writing, where that writing is sort of my medium for storytelling. The cartoons are something different. The cartoons are more like snapshots of they're like scenes from movies that would never be made in a million years, or parts of conversations that you would never hear anywhere else. And that's the way I like to think of the cartoons, is that these are very different than my writing.
They remind me a little bit of, what's the name of the cartoon that's kind of like this? It's a one panel thing. And I'm trying to remember who the writer is, but he's done this for years, and he stopped for a little while and then he came back, and it's, The best side? One I ever saw was the one with the Far Side. Yeah, that's it. The guy would sit there, and there's this kid, and he's trying to go in the outdoor, and he's got his hand up against the door. And that one always makes me laugh. There's several of those that made me laugh, and this reminds me a little of that.
Well, I appreciate the comparison. I was a huge Far Side fan when I was a kid. I mean, I think that, yeah, these are probably my Far Side, even though I don't think they're very similar. They're probably not as funny or as interesting as the Gary Larson comic. You're probably right. These are my version of that. These are the Far Side as it relates to my brain.
Well, that's good, though. It shouldn't be exactly like Far Side, because you already got the guy doing that.
So why would I do your own thing? Why would you need a second-rate Far Side when you could have a first-rate whatever this is?
So it'll be good. So once again, I like to mention it several times just in case somebody comes in the middle. It's going to be funded if it reaches its goal, which it already has done as of our talking tonight, Thursday, May 4, 11:52 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And I got a chance while we were talking. I went ahead and signed up for one of them, so that should help a little bit there.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you very much. That will definitely will.
I've got to read some of these other ones. There's got to be other ones that are entertaining. So I really want to be able to get these. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Is it all black and white, by the way?
Yes. I do have color cartoons as well. But I thought for my first book, I would just keep it black and white to keep the printing costs down and hopefully make the books as cheap and accessible as possible.
Well, I think they're going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to reading it, and I think other people will enjoy it quite a bit. Obviously, that's the case because you've already got your goal met. So good things are going to happen, and I can't wait. Are you going to keep calling them bunk bed mishaps, or are you going to change the title if you come back with a second one?
If I do more books, I'll just change the title. I won't call it Bunk Bed Mishaps 2 or whatever. I don't really think of this as a brand, but I'll just keep changing the title.
Because it won't be Bunk Bed Mishaps 2.
No. It'll be something, some other equally weird title.
Okay, something that only you could think of that the rest of us would sit there. I never thought of that.
Hopefully it'll be like a title where people will think, I don't know what this is about, but I'm going to at least open the book and look at it for a minute because of the title.
Well, while we're talking about titles, let's talk about My Bad, which I'm fascinated by. I have to say, I got to read the description real quickly because it makes me laugh. This is a story so far. A serial killer who collected his demonic blood tribute while wearing a trick dummy pizza delivery worker costume was apprehended. A couple of issues ago, actually. Why would I be bringing this up now? Oh, and lizards from outer space are attacking Earth. I see, that's the kind of stuff that I could never do. That is in my mind, that's kind of out there. So that is something different from anything else that I read. So I like that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it is sort of a parody of superhero and supervillain comics, but it's one which I think is a parody that is weirder than the stuff it's satirizing. So it does kind of take on a life of its own. A lot of these storylines are things that I've pitched to DC as legitimate superhero stories, and they've told me, we like the idea, but no, not in a million years will we ever do this. So it's good to have somewhere else where I can put them in. And it's probably the most fun comic I work on, because I not only, you know, Bryce is a good friend of mine and he's co-writing it with me, and I love working with Peter and Kelly Fitzpatrick. Not only is it a fun crew, but it's just these, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you don't have to worry too much about the ideas making sense. It's almost better to have them do the opposite. To the wackier the idea, the better, which is really sort of a refreshing experience for a writer.
I just have to ask, why is it called My Bad? It's is that to be, well, that being funny? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I think we're that's the idea. We're trying to be funny, for better or for worse. But really, the name came from Bryce was writing a short that was going to go on as an extra in Second Coming, in which he was going to write about his characters, Emperor King and Acid Chimp. And the short was going to be called My Bad. And we decided, though, with what he came up with, we liked it so much that we thought we didn't want to like put this in the Second Coming universe, because it felt like a very different universe. And it also felt like much more expansive. It felt like it should be its own universe. So that's when we came up with the idea, like, really, this should be its own comic. This should be its own running world. And so Tom asked me if I would be interested in writing half of it, and we would just create a new comic. And when I said yes, we thought, well, okay, let's look for a name for the series. And we tried on probably about a dozen different names that we thought we might call the series. But then we realized we all kind of liked the original name of the short, My Bad, better than all the other names we came up with for the comic book series. So we just called the series My Bad, which originally was just going to be like a 2 or 3 page short at the end of Second Coming.
It's really entertaining. You've got the lizard people there, and they've got human-like slaves or something like that. And they sit and talk to each other, the lizards do. And there's one in the issue number 5 is the one that I got to read most recently. And the one lizard with a cape on is like a red cape. So it turns to one and says, they really are useless, aren't they? And the other one goes, all right, let's just annihilate them from orbit. Collect the heat lamps after they're all dead. No muss, no fuss.
They really just want to come to Earth and exterminate the human race and take our heat lamps. Which is what they're really interested in. The human race are expendable because they've already got enough of these galley slaves working their spaceship, so they don't need any more. So why would you bother bringing more of these rat-like humans on board your spaceship?
Wow, it's just so wild.
Yeah, it's a fun series. I mean, I always look forward to working on them. And we've got a third series that's in the pipeline right now.
Oh, wow. When's that going to come out?
Probably towards the end of 2023 or early 2024. We haven't set a specific date yet.
Okay, that'll be fun. Now, I've got to ask just for people's benefit. There's a superhero team in this book. Who is the superhero team?
Well, there's a number of superheroes. There's the Chandelier, who is a sort of disgraced superhero because he accidentally gave away his secret identity and he's a billionaire heir to a lamp fortune named Jamington Winthrop, who, because his family owns this lamp factory, dresses up in a lamp-based costume and goes out at night as the chandelier just because he can and he thinks this is great fun. But there's also, in this series, there's the Amazon, who's a large female sort of Xena Princess Warrior-esque hero. There's also Manchild, who is sort of Hulk-like. He is a guy who's really into self-improvement and therapy. But when he gets angry, when he loses control of his temper, he turns into this enormous creature that he can't control. And there's Dr. Do-Over, sort of a Doctor Strange knockoff, where he can turn back time. And that's his one power. He can, like, turn back time and force everybody to do something over.
Oh, wow. Cool. I missed the first volume. I got to go back and get that one. I'll have to go back and get that so I can catch up on what's going on that, because it is so wild. Then there's the one-of-a-kind rocket ships, and there's I love the hat that they put on. There's the hat of honesty, which is, yeah, you know, right out of Harry Potter kind of stuff. It makes me laugh.
It's a sort of a spoof of Wonder Woman and her lasso of truth. Instead, the Amazon has a hat of honesty, and it's this goofy looking, like Mary Poppins like hat she has to put on whoever she's interrogating. And then not only are they forced to be honest, but they sort of overshare. They're honest about a lot of things she didn't even ask them about. So it's kind of like almost TMI.
Oh, man, it's going to be fun. So how many issues are in the second volume?
Five.
So this number five is the last of the
volume. That's it. Yep. There's five in the first one as well, and I imagine there probably will be in the third.
I'm going to get that first volume. I didn't read all the second volume, so I'm going to get the second volume too when that comes out, because I'm just going to be really interested to see these crazy. I don't know how somebody thinks of this stuff. It's just, you know, I couldn't write a regular comic. To write this one, I can't imagine, you know, how you do that. It's got to be something. You must be having a lot of fun when you do this.
Well, it helps that I'm co-writing it. So it, for me, yeah, one of the things that's kind of liberating is I don't have to write a whole issue by myself because I'm co-writing it with Bryce Ingman. So I write 10 pages and he writes 10 pages. That makes it a lot easier. And it also makes it kind of like a game. You know, we're back and forthing. I'm playing off of what he's written. He's playing off of what I'm written. So I think it's part of what makes it such a fun series to work on.
Well, that's cool, because it's really funny. I've missed out on parts, so I've got to go back and catch up on that one. So it's going to be good stuff to do. Maybe I can add that to my stuff on the Kickstarter. Maybe that's what I'll do. That'll work out good. So let's talk about Billionaire Island and the dog and Billionaire Island, which that one, that's another book that really entertains me no end, because the billionaires are strange and wonderful people. And to see this island and to see I don't want to spoil anything, but let's just say the dog has a very important role to play on Billionaire Island. And now you've done two volumes of that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Billionaire Island Cult of Dogs is the second one, in which Business Dog is sort of the central figure. And it's out right now.
I'm looking forward to that. I've read most of that one. I haven't gotten through all of it, but it really is an entertaining book. Lots and lots of wonderful things to go. Is that going to be all you're going to do with the Billionaire Islands, those two?
I think so. I think that's all we have planned. I have an idea for a third one, but we haven't really talked about doing a third one yet.
Okay. And of course I've got to talk with you about Second Coming, which is the one that as I think I told you before, when I first got into it, I was nervous about it. I wasn't quite certain how this was all going to work. But when I got in there, you kept saying these really interesting things about Jesus and Jesus followers. And I was really fascinated. It made me think and really got me engaged on those. So I think the first issue of the third volume has just been released. which I'm enjoying. And that's this. I never thought seeing Jesus in a superhero book would actually work for me. So it's an amazing thing.
Yeah, I know it sounds like a terrible idea, but yeah, I feel like in a lot of ways the superhero and Jesus are two sides of the same coin. The coin being, you know, the question of what is the appropriate way to use power. And so I feel like even though it sounds ridiculous, if people take a chance on it, they find that a lot of the things we talk about in Second Coming are not ridiculous, but are very relevant to the world and the way it is now, the way it is today.
Mm-hmm. It just amazes me. It gives me so much to think about. You know, being something of a religious person myself, I'm always fascinated when a comic book actually makes me think about my religion and my beliefs and stuff like that. So that's one of the things I really enjoy about The Second Coming is that it's so different and so interesting and so thoughtful that I just can't help but really enjoy it.
Well, thank you. That's very, I'm glad to hear you're receiving it that way. Cause I think a lot of people, particularly religious people, were a little nervous about this comic because it sounds like it could just be, you know, wall-to-wall mockery or it's making fun of Christianity, but it really wasn't my intent at all. My intent was really to explore Christianity through the actual ideas of Christ, as opposed to the institutions which have sort of taken over religion since he's been gone for the last 2,000 years.
Yeah, it's something that churches have to be really careful about because – you know, the I love the one where they showed him like the church is using a football analogy, and those things always make me uncomfortable. So I was glad to see that in there because that's always been something I've been kind of since now. I wouldn't do that if it was me. Some of us aren't into football. We don't quite get that thing. So I always love those kinds of things.
Right. I think in a lot of ways, this is what's wrong with the world is that it's easier to conceive of politics or religion the same way you would like a college football game, where it's just basically our side lining up against their side and what the religion actually teaches or what your, you know, how it actually affects you is immaterial. You just want your side to win. And I think that's kind of the commentary with that. But yeah, it is more a satire of the institutions of Christianity than it is of Christianity itself.
It's really interesting. I really enjoy reading it and stuff. Now, in the third volume, which I think the first one is the only one that's out so far?
That's right. The first issue of Second Coming Trinity just came out last week. So the third volume is underway.
So it's going to be 5 issues in the third volume then?
6 issues. And we've already been approved for a 4th volume. But yeah, for this run, there'll be 6 issues.
Okay. That'll be kind of fun. Now I've got to ask, if I remember correctly, didn't DC pass on this? DC Comics originally said they were going to do it and then they changed their mind.
Yeah. It was originally going to be part of, be published by Vertigo, but then, you know, there was apparently a slow news day on Fox News, and they did like sort of a culture war story about this, and then that sent like thousands upon thousands of people like emailing DC or, you know, complaining that they were going to do this comic about Jesus Christ. And keep in mind, this is before anyone had even seen a single page of the comic book. So nobody even really knew what they were mad about. They just knew that they were mad about it, which is, you know, kind of typical for these Fox News culture war stories. It's always something people have never heard of before, and suddenly it's the most important thing in their life. But DC felt the heat enough that they sort of approached me and asked if I would be interested in taking it somewhere else. And then they kindly actually, you know, let me keep all the money they'd paid me and let me take it, you know, gave me the rights back without fighting me on it. So in a lot of ways, I feel like that was the best thing that could have happened to the comic because I took it to Ahoy and they let me make it really the way I wanted to.
Oh, well, did you do things differently?
It is pretty different. First and foremost, they let me put more pages in, especially the first issue. The first issue was 30 pages long. So they let me make it more, a more developed, nuanced story than it would have been in the Vertigo version. And they also brought in Leonard Kirk, which I thought was sort of a fateful decision, because he was, the idea would being that he would be doing the superhero story and that Richard Pace would be doing the sort of the flashbacks to ancient Judea and the scenes in heaven, and that it would give this comic this sort of multi-world feel. But Leonard, you know, has come on and done a lot of great interior art for us, and that would not have happened if it hadn't have been for Ahoy thinking of, you know, Ahoy allowing that to happen. So I think Ahoy has really allowed us to do things and go places with this comic that DC and Vertigo would have been much more reluctant to do.
Cool. And you got a fourth volume going. Do you think the fourth volume will be the last, or do you think you have more story beyond that?
No, hopefully, if all goes well, we'll do like 5 or 6 volumes of the story. That's about how many I've got planned in my head.
Now, I'm curious that I always want to call him Sunspot. The superhero and the wife, they have a child in the third volume. And I'm just sort of curious as to how's that going to go? Are you going to follow that child along? Because Jesus is basically babysitting the child. Are we going to get to see the child grow up? What's going to happen with that?
Yeah, this kid, Jordan, yeah, he becomes very important to the story. The son of Sunstar and Sheila, their kid Jordan, has superpowers, more or less the same superpowers that Sunstar has, and this creates, as you would imagine, some huge problems for trying to raise a toddler with superpowers. And it's strangely something that both Sunstar and Jesus Christ can relate to, both having been children with superpowers, and about how easy it is for you to remain a child when everybody's afraid to tell you no. And so there's a moral dimension to it, and also I think it's kind of what drives the story in the third and fourth volumes, the fact that they have this kid with superpowers.
Oh, wow. So do the powers manifest pretty early in the child's life, or is it going to be like a mutant in X-Men? The X-Men, they don't show up until they're young adults.
No, this kid's got powers right out of the gate, which is horrifying when you think about it.
Yeah, that worries me, because when you got a young child with powers beyond their ability to control them, I take it that's going to be part of the story.
Yeah, absolutely, big part.
Okay, that'll be fun to see. I'll be really interested to see how this goes and stuff. I also wanted to say too that I really like the character of Cranius in Second Coming Trinity. I actually felt sorry for him at several parts, so that was a really amazing thing to see somebody who was obviously supposed to be like a Lex Luthor type character. And to see him actually, and to feel sorry for him, I thought was really something. Really nice bit of writing. Is it going to be coming out monthly from Ahoy?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll be looking forward to that. I got to make sure that my store orders it, because if it's one I don't want to miss, that's going to be good. So Second Coming, 6 issues, the Trinity is this edition of it, and all the other good things. Are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
The only other one I want to talk about right now, because it's coming out soon, is I'm doing a new project with Rumpus, with AWA, called Rumpus Room, which is about a billionaire who puts people who cross him in his Rumpus Room, and one by one he has them crushed and made into a really excellent skin cream. And that comes out, I think, in September.
Okay, that's going to be different. I have to say about that. Is that like a one-shot, or are you going to have multiple issues for that?
It's going to be a series, so there's going to be 5 issues of that.
Okay, looking forward to that. That'll be good. It'll all come out really good. Once again, we get back to the Kickstarter real quick. It's called Bunk Bed Mishaps, and it's going to reach its goal on Thursday, May 4 at 11:52 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. If somebody wants to follow up with your other projects and things like that, are you on social media?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter for the moment. At Manrus, and I'm also at Instagram on the same handle, at MANRUSS.
Okay, and we look forward to seeing those good things as they come out. I would recommend Second Coming particularly. I really like that one a lot, so that's a good book. And again, all these other good books are definitely, see Mark's name on it, I would pick it up, including the Flintstones. There's so many people I know who still talk about the Flintstones and Snagglepuss. So I would recommend all these books. And I think, Mark, you're doing a great job. And I'm looking forward to see what else you're going to be doing in the future, because they're all going to be great reads.
Well, thank you very much, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome back to the podcast David Whalen, the indie creator of such great things as The Offspring and Evolution Utero, and got good things going on. How are things going with you, David?
Hi, Wayne. Thanks so much for having me on the show again. It's going great. Couldn't be happier with the process and the product.
Good, good. Well, now, The Offspring, as it was originally described in the last time you and I talked, was that three friends coming to terms with their shared troubled past and emerging strange new powers investigate the sudden widespread disappearance of children all over the country. Mm-hmm. But as I understand, you're up to issue number 24, working on 25, right?
Yeah. I just published last month issue 24, and it's grown since. So the last time we've talked, the disappearing children was the first story arc from issues one through four, and it's grown into some craziness since then.
So are the same characters around, or are you into other characters?
Same characters. The three main characters that I started with, Will, Sarah, and Vince. Now, though, we are starting at issue 23. I started hinting that there was a fourth member of this group that was connected to this group somehow. I started hinting that around issue 9. Or 10. And now we're starting to unravel that mystery in issues 23, 24, 25, our Lightning Crashes storyline that brings Megan, our newest character, into the fold, tells a little bit about her backstory, where she's been and what she's been doing, how she's connected loosely to the group, the three main characters that we started with, and how their overall connection starts to grow as the storyline progresses.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Lightning Crashes is three issues, right, for that storyline?
Three issues, yes.
Okay. And you made a couple of the pages available to me, and I'm interested. The character we see her, Megan, we see her first, she apparently ends up at a church door. And a pastor comes out she says that he asks her if she's lost, and she says, "I can't be lost if I have nowhere to go."
Yeah.
Which I thought was a great little line.
Oh, thank you.
So talk about what do we know about that character at this point, or what should we know?
Not much, which is the way I try to do it. You know, each of the four characters, they've all been through it in their lives. The main thrust of their story is that they've all been mentally and physically abused as children, and the way they were mentally or physically abused is how their powers manifested. So this character, and each of these four characters, they all handle their past, their pain. They all handle them a little bit differently. One of them is very much introverted and doesn't talk to people much. One of them talks too much, doesn't know when to shut up. One of them tries to make structure and tries to have the appearance of normalcy. And Megan, who I'm dealing with now in the Lightning Crashes storyline, runs. She tries to get away. So when we first meet her, we see the painful surgence of her powers and why her powers came about. And she, as she gets kind of ping-ponged from police to foster home to eventually landing at the Blake Alternative School, where she meets the other three characters as children. So they're about 9 and 10 years old when they first meet. They're, because of their shared psychic connection to each other, their powers just kind of go crazy, and they end up kind of not hurting, but putting other kids in danger. So they all kind of run out and they kind of talk about, oh my gosh, we've got these powers, we've got this, we've got that. And Megan, being a runner, she immediately packs up her stuff and goes. So the first part of the story is her kind of on the road as a 12 or 13 year old, going through different like anthology type little stories that kind of show why, where she's going and how she's getting there. And once we she finally starts to settle down at this church where this pastor clearly has taken her in. We fast forward a little bit. We'll get to a little bit more of her past a little bit later, but we fast forward a little bit to where she's clearly been at with the pastor for about 10 years. So she's now 19, 20 years old. I kind of like do a count of 476 days since the last accident with her powers. So it's kind of like showing that she's kind of getting a little bit control, kind of like realizing that this is sort of a safe space. And as we're starting to realize that she's realizing that, something else happens that makes it a not safe space for her. And that's where we kind of are with her. And she meets a character that we have met before from a three-part Civil War story that the kids traveled back in time, where we met Megan back in the past during the American Civil War. And the bad guy, his name was General Odyssey. And she meets him again by accident at a hospital. He realizes who she is and starts to manipulate her and take her to be able to use her powers for nefarious reasons.
Okay, wait a minute.
That was a lot, wasn't it? That was a lot.
Well, yeah, but the thing that puzzled me the most was you said that Megan was in the Civil War?
So issues 13, 14, and 15 – after I've introduced that there is this character, Megan, who psychically connects with the three main characters, Will, Vince, and Sarah, they realize that to be able to find her, they realize that it's not where in this time, but it's when in another time that they need to be able to connect with her to be able to find her. And they've realized that through their psychic connection, they can manipulate time, travel back in time, and they're thrust into the American Civil War, where they eventually do meet up with Megan. It's a whole thing. It's a whole storyline. It turned out really well. I was super happy with one of my first major time travel stories, and I think it went well. I think it lends itself for the rest of her story and thrusting the other three characters into trying to find her in our time now.
Okay, I guess I have to read the books. I haven't read these books. How in the world did this girl who is she's living in the present, mm-hmm. apparently, but she was in the Civil War, which is almost 200 years.
So that connects with what we're with issue 24, because the General Odyssey, who was the bad guy in the Civil War story, is now Dr. Odyssey. And as he takes her and manipulates her for his, like I said, her his own nefarious reasons, that is when we see how she got into the Civil War, how she got thrust into time, into the American Civil War, and how she gets back into our time. So it's trying to weave in and out, so to speak, of some of these storylines and trying to make it as clear and concise as possible. I think if you read the stories, I think it works pretty well. Time travel can be difficult, but I've tried to make it simple yet engaging.
Okay, very good. So I'm really interested now. I want to talk a little bit more about Megan because, of course, the name of the story is The Lightning Strikes, right?
Lightning Crashes.
Crashes, yeah. And of course, her powers seem to be electric, mm-hmm. or lightning or something like that.
Yes.
when the first time we see her, she's talking to the pastor, and the first thing, one of the things she asks him, "You don't have a pool, do you?" And he says, "No, no pool." Good. And of course, electric and water and stuff like that, mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily mix very well. Sure. So that's a clue right there that that's her powers.
When we see her, when her powers first manifested, there was, I don't want to give too much away, but there was definitely water involved, and her family did not fare well.
Ooh. Okay.
Is that a good tease? Did I tease it well?
Yeah, that's interesting. I want to know what happens there. And of course, she's helping out at, like in a place where they're serving food to people. Mm-hmm. And she's there until somebody decides to get her angry or upset. Mm-hmm. And things don't do all that well. Mm-hmm. One of the things I really enjoy, because that you do the, not only do you do the writing and stuff like that, you do the artwork
yeah,
as well.
I'm a one-man band, yeah.
I like the way that you did her power. She's there and she yells out enough, and she puts her hand out, and you know, a lot of lightning things are massive, big, thick lightning mm-hmm. bolts, kind of like yeah. Shazam kind of no. Lightning kind of stuff. But you don't do that. You use the very thin strands of electric, which I have to say, it reminded me very much of Star Wars. I remember when the Emperor was attacking Luke, mm-hmm. and he was on the ground, and this lightning was on him. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I'll never forget was that the lightning was touching his teeth.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh, mm-hmm. that's got to hurt like heck. But this is very much along those lines. Well, how did you decide to do the electricity this way?
Yeah, in developing there, she went through a few iterations of how I thought her powers would look. And I you know, thought of that Shazam big, huge thing happening. But that seemed – with my stories, I try to make sure that – I think all my stories have a lot of scope, have bigger issues, underlining issues. But I try to make the stories very intimate to the characters, to the reader, to me. Because I think these are very intimate stories. These are very personal things that are happening to these characters that I put through the ringer. So in the end, I felt like her powers should really look like they manifest from her, and also to where it doesn't quite look like she's got control over them, but they're definitely coming from her. So those smaller strands – to me, made it much more intimate to her.
Oh, it makes much more painful.
Yes,
in my mind, because that was very much. Now that's in issue 23, and you gave me a couple of pages out of issue 24, mm-hmm. which is and things have changed quite a lot. Mm-hmm. She is that doctor apparently has gotten a hold of her. Mm-hmm. And is at one point he says, "Today you reach your full potential." And he has a machine that enhances her abilities, apparently, it looks like.
Yeah, I don't want to give too much away. Let's just say that this machine is the thing that catapults them into the American Civil War.
Oh,
so okay. He has two reasons for building this machine. One is greed. Mm-hmm. And the other is... how can I say it too? I haven't quite gotten to that story. I've hinted at it in issue 24, but I haven't quite gotten to that part of the story yet. But it is him collecting souls to be able to build an army. And that army will start to manifest over the next 5 or 6 issues when we start season 3. Season 2 ends at issue 25. Okay. So season 2 will end in a cliffhanger that will at issue 25 that will continue the story into issue 26 that will be coming out probably at the end of summer.
Okay. Is this army with like people with special abilities like Megan?
No, this is an army that he is using that he is using to be able to, and we'll see him use the army throughout issues. Season three starts with them continuing to travel through time. So they're going to be going, continuing to travel through time back further into time, to be able to unlock certain memories, core memories, and certain abilities in the four main characters that will be important to when they go back to a place called the Leeway that they went into in issues 9, 10, and 11. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. 11, 12, and 13, excuse me. That is the home of these godlike creatures that are manipulating them.
Hmm.
25 issues, you can get a lot in. You get a lot of stuff
in. Particularly if you got lots of action and stuff like that. That was really big things. The one thing I'm also interested in is when her powers start to activate and he's got like a portal. And obviously that's how he goes back in time. And she asks, what's happening? What are you talking about? And he says, oh, I'm just going to make a quick trip to the bank, mm-hmm. and I'll be right back. Is this him going back in time?
So yes, not giving too much away, but I have always been a big fan of unsolved mysteries, of unsolved heists. So I have always wanted to use that in storylines. So this was 20 years ago that I thought of this concept. So Dr. Odyssey, who is using Megan to be able to power this machine that can allow him to travel back in time, is going back in time, and we find that he is the person that has gone back in time, done these heists, collect this money, and then disappeared because he's traveling through time. One of the examples I use is D.B. Cooper.
Right. That's what I was just exactly thinking about.
And I try not to say the thing. I was hesitant to even say that one, but I try not to 100% nail down the heist itself because I want it to be a fun little thing if the readers recognize it. Mm-hmm. If the readers recognize the heist, they're pretty famous heists, most of them. The D.B. Cooper one is probably the most famous that I use. But there are other ones, the Father's Day Massacre. I'm going to stop saying things because I want the reader to be able to recognize them if they can.
Right. You don't want to spoil
too much. Exactly. So
this is all setting up the next arc, yes. Basically.
Yeah. I always like to say that there's so much there that I don't want to give too much away, but this is definitely setting up why Megan is distrustful, why she runs, and then when she's at the hospital, and this was funny too, her mentor who is the priest, whatever you want to call him, says, you need to, you've been with me for 10 years and I know you don't trust me. If you don't let people in, you're never going to heal. And as he says that, Dr. Odyssey, who we know is the bad guy, comes in and says, hey, I can help you. And right after that conversation of you don't trust people, the person that she should definitely not trust walks in the door. And that opens up the next situation where she is thrust into this problem from bad to worse of, you know, just, you know, reusing her powers by accident again to defend people, but she didn't want to use her powers again. And now her powers are being used against her for reasons that she definitely has no control over. So it's kind of that storyline from bad to worse kind of thing. And I try to make it keep going worse and worse and worse. And issue 25 is going to get even crazier because that's going to be the catalyst to them going back into time again.
Okay. All right. I guess you don't want to spoil where they're going.
Let's see. 1962. And if you're a fan of Unsolved Murders, your viewers could probably figure out 1962 an unsolved murder, unsolved serial killer.
So it's not President Kennedy then.
No. Unsolved serial killer, a serial killer that was never captured in 1962.
okay, as much as I am interested in serial killers, I'm not remembering that one. I'm sure we'll find out.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is going to be interesting. It's interesting that time travel is involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's that so many people shy away from that. And you remember when on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, when O'Brien was there, he said, "Time travel gives me a headache." Famously,
yeah, it's definitely been tricky. It was something that from the very beginning I had in the story. I've had these characters for 30 years, and was constantly building the story. And as I grew and matured, the story grew and matured. And I don't know how much I've matured now at almost 48, but it was something that was definitely part of the story from the beginning, because it was about for these characters, for these kids who are in their 20s, learning about themselves and unlocking things in themselves that they didn't know they could do because they had been stunted from the beginning with this abuse that they had to endure as children. So for me, the time travel is definitely a metaphor for them being able to grow and be comfortable in their own skin, to be able to change and grow in a way that they haven't in the first part of their lives. So while they're going back into time, they're starting to grow and change themselves as individuals in a way that they never had been able to because of their stunted growth, because of their abuse that they had to endure.
Okay.
And if you're a fan of like Quantum Leap, that kind of time travel kind of story, this is very much up that kind of alley.
Okay. All right. It's interesting. So do you want to real quickly go over and talk about who the other three characters are, just in case somebody hadn't heard your interview before?
Yeah. So Will is the de facto leader. He is a character that handles the abuse a little bit differently. He, at the beginning, does not have powers that manifest outwardly like the other characters. His parents were not so much abusive as they were neglectful, and maybe a little more self-centered to be able to not quite take care of a baby the way that Will needed to be taken care of. Will was constantly left to his own devices, and I'm talking baby, like months out of. So Will, there was an accident, and he had a fall. And instead, and it affected his spinal column. It affected his nervous system. And as Will grew, doctors realized that he wasn't so much growing up as growing out. And his musculature was affected to where now he's, after going through puberty, he's very short, barely 5 foot, but he is very strong and very muscular to the point that his muscles have tightened and hardened, and he is super, super strong. So it's a case where Will is very strong on the outside, but clearly masking problems on the inside. He's one of those characters that looks like, at the beginning of the story, looks like he's got it all together, but there's cracks that start to show as the story continues. I like to call him the duck on the pond. Above the water, the duck is just sailing away nice and smooth. Under the water, the feet are flapping and going crazy all over the place. So he's one of those characters that slowly starts to show the cracks. While Vince and Sarah, the cracks are front and center. Vince is one of those characters that handles his problems with a joke, and oftentimes inappropriately. When he was a child, his father was not around, but his mother was a drug addict and was constantly abusive physically and mentally to him. He, at one point, as punishment, got hot water thrown at him, and it wasn't the first time it had happened. I allude to that. But as this last time that we see his powers start to manifest and the water circles around him, in a sphere, doesn't touch him, and he's able to thrust it back onto his mother. And that's the first time he realizes that he can control water and he starts to control the water and is in his body. He can heat it. He can cool it. It doesn't have to be just water. It can be any kind of liquid outside of his body. And he uses that in an inappropriate way in fights oftentimes. And I will leave that at that so readers can look for that in some of the fights that they get into. And Vince is very much, I'd say, very much me in my 20s. Always a joke at the tip of my tongue and always a little bit inappropriate at the tip of my tongue. So I use him as a little bit of an outlet to talk about some of the things that I went through in my 20s. Sarah is definitely the introvert, doesn't like being touched. She was abused as a child, so definitely doesn't like being touched. And she has, created after being abused physically and mentally by her father, has created a force shield, a physical force shield around her that she can use to be able to lift objects, lift herself, create a literal and figurative wall around herself that people cannot get through. So she, like I said, is very much an introvert. And I play with those different dichotomies through all these characters and how they handle this different abuse.
Okay. As far as like dealing with abuse and things like that, how accurate are you as far as like dealing with how they do that? Like, because I was just reading like on Superman and Lois, she's gotten diagnosed with breast cancer, and they went to people, you know, who treat people with that problem and tried to make it as accurate as possible. Did you do the same thing with your characters?
I did. I'm a teacher, so I've been working with kids for 30 years now, 25, 30 years now. And I, grew up with kids that I knew that were in not as dramatic as, what I put my, characters through, but kids that I grew up with that were in situations that could be considered pretty dangerous. Not could be, that were considered pretty, that were pretty dangerous. And when I developed this idea, I wanted these kids to be like painfully real. And I wanted them to go through struggles that weren't easily fixed. Like, you know, you read Superman and Superman solved the problem in 24 issues. The problem is solved. Mixus Pitalik is done. He's back to the fifth dimension or whatever it's called. And the problem is solved, on to the next adventure. But I definitely wanted these characters to have these struggles and have these real life debilitating issues and know that it wasn't something that was going to be not even easily fixed, but really fixed at all. It's something that they'll have to deal with for the rest of their lives. And it's how they deal with those problems that is the story, not those problems going away, because they never will.
Mm-hmm. Right, they have to learn how to live with certain problems. It's like coming down with diabetes, which is I've come down with, and you've got to the rest of your life. You've got to do things differently as a result of that.
Yeah, so it's changing. Right. It's making sure that your mental and physical health are there. And these characters are not a place where their mental and physical health are good. We meet them in issues, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 4, the first story arc, where they are in the worst place of their lives. They are not well. And it's that climbing out of that ditch, climbing out of that gutter, which is the story that I want to tell. And not only realizing that it's not about them helping themselves, but helping others in the process also.
Wow. Okay. That's great. Now, you had the first three for like the first 23 issues, and then you introduced Megan. Mm-hmm. Is there a possibility we might get more people joining the group over time?
No, because there's a very specific reason why there are four of them that I touch on in season one. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But because we are almost done with season two, my plan is to go to just past 50 issues. I think it's going to be about 53, depending on how much I want to stretch certain parts of the story. So knowing that I have an end game and an end number of issues that I want to get to, introducing Megan at this point was kind of integral to the storyline and how these characters grow and change and how they accept a fourth member into this very tight clique at this point. It was to me, a story worth telling about acceptance and inclusion with a group of characters that were not very inclusionary. They were very tight knit. So to be able to introduce her now, almost halfway through the series, was a very specific thing I wanted to do, to be able to talk about how each character dealt with new people.
Okay, because that's probably something important for people who deal with struggles and things like that. How do you let people in? How do you grow and mature?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And Megan was someone who never let anybody in. She refused to in any real way. So having her meet these characters who she knows there's a real link to, a real psychic link, but not an emotional link to them yet. So to be able to have her, you know, take two steps forward and then eight steps back is going to be her struggle as they start to develop their friendship.
Cool. So it sounds like a great, because normally in comics, that's not the way characters are. Mm-hmm. They are, you're right, they're usually very emotionally stable. They've, you know, no problems and stuff like that. And so it's nice to see something a little different and deal with it, a little more realistic.
I tried. That was one of my major points that I wanted to really drive home when I was developing these characters. This isn't Superman. They're not at the peak of perfection. They are very flawed characters that show it, that make mistakes, that do and say stupid things. And that was definitely something that I wanted to show, because that's something everybody, I know I do. That's something that everybody can relate to.
Mm-hmm, very good. Good. Now, I probably asked this before, but I'm always asking the question, why? Why is it called The Offspring?
So I wanted a title that alluded to the three main characters, and you're thinking that they're the offspring the whole time. Who, the offspring of what? The offspring of who? Why do they call them the offspring? They never called themselves this. They all have code names, like superhero code names. Mm-hmm. In my brain, they have them, but I never say them out loud. They never say them out loud. They're not superheroes. So the title, The Offspring, as they start to meet these godlike creatures that are manipulating them throughout the whole series. And they get thrust into this godlike creature realm called the Leeway. They talk a little bit about who the offspring are, about why it's important to these three, soon to be four, characters, and who their offspring are, and why it's going to be very, very important down the road.
Okay, that's good to know, because those kinds of things always drive me crazy. I always want to know why. You know, I don't know why they're called Avengers. They're not avenging anything. Yeah. That just happens to be a cool name. You know,
thing. Sure.
So 25 will be out in May, you said?
Yes, early May.
Okay, and after that we get into another arc, and that'll be the end of the summer, right?
Yes, the end of summer. So issue 25 is the end of season 2, and the trade of issues 23, 24, 25, and I usually have a backup. If there's only 3 issue story arcs, I like to put a backup. I have multiple one-shots that I've put out over the last few years that I put on the back of these trades to be able to just have another story in there, something else for people to see, other things that I create, and other kind of characters and stories that I like to tell. So it'll have a backup story on the end of that trade, which is going to be volume 6 of The Offspring, collecting 23, 24, 25, and one of the one shots, and then issues 13 through 25 omnibus coming out during summer also, collecting all of season 2.
Okay. So now that we've talked about that, how do people get a hold of The Offspring?
So you can find the links to every book I've ever created on our website, correcthandedcomics.com, on social media. If you type in correct-handed, I'll probably pop up. You'll see a big blue hand, a big blue left hand for Correct Handed Comics. You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, on TikTok, on Instagram, on LinkedIn. Correct Handed Comics or correct_handed.
Okay, before I let you go, I've got a follow up on the other book, which I found was really interesting, Evolution Utero. I only got to read the first couple of books of that. And I was just kind of curious, did that storyline end? Did you wrap that up?
I did. It was a 4-issue miniseries. And it's kind of like my I hope this doesn't scare people off, but it's kind of like my Back to the Future, to where the storyline wraps up after 4 issues, but there's definitely a little tail end that could lead into the next 4-issue story arc that I plan on getting out in the next 5 years. I've got it all written. It's just a matter of having time to be able to draw and create. Like I said, I'm a one-man band. So The Offspring is definitely my main focus right now. And I like to be able to get at least 2 one-shots out every single year. So being able to find time to be able to focus on a 4-issue miniseries is tough. But Evolution Utero, the 4 issues, it's all 4 issues end in a nice ending, I think. But to be able to have that little tag in for me is a fun way to be able to introduce the next story arc. When I get to it.
Okay, because I think that intrigued me about this was that you've got a girl and she has a super-powered fetus inside
her.
That intrigued me. I haven't got a chance to get the end of that story. I'm going to have to go back and access that.
I'd love to be able to hear your thoughts if you ever get a chance to be able to read it, because the whole idea was, you hear the phrase all the time that they were born to be a hero. They were born to be this. They were born to be that. So I wasn't really planning on doing any kind of superhero, specific superhero stuff, because, you know, that's done all over the place. But I thought of this idea of, what if there's a hero that has yet to be born and is inside their mother's womb still? And what if the mother was the worst person in the world? Definitely not Mom, Pa, Kent. But was the worst person in the world, drugs and bad choices and no focus in life and treated people like trash and was just not a great person. What would the realization of a superpowered fetus in her belly do to her mentally? Like, how would that change her? And it's an analogy for how parenthood changes you as a person. Most people as a person.
Do we follow up on those characters after that miniseries? Or are they in Offspring later on?
They are not. They're separate. It's a loosely shared universe. Like I said, it's not specifically a superhero story. There's no capes or anything like that. You know, one of the characters does have a bit of a suit, but I don't know if I'd call it a superhero suit. But it's a vaguely loosely shared universe, but I haven't mentioned these characters, those Evolution Udo characters in The Offspring at all.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's the Wayland verse, basically.
Sure. I'll go on with that. Yeah. Hey.
Okay. So, all right. If I guess it's the same way you can get a hold of that, the same way you can get a hold of The Offspring.
All those links, correcthandedcomics.com.
Okay. Now, let's say people want to follow you and keep up with what you're up to and when things are going to come out. How do they do that on social media?
Yeah, so I'm an old man, so I still have Facebook, but I do. I get a lot of traffic on Facebook from mostly old men like me. But any social media, TikTok, I was amazed at. I started TikTok probably about 2 years ago. And was just trying to do silly, weird videos, showing off my stuff and showing off the books and just it kind of blew up on TikTok. So I try to get as much on TikTok as I possibly can. And I'm correct_handed You can find me on Instagram, Correct Handed. You can find me on LinkedIn, Correct Handed Comics. So like I said, if you type in to any social media, Correct Handed Comics, I'll pop up.
I always get a kick out of that name. You're talking about left-handed,
I'm a,
right?
I'm a southpaw, yep. So it's the joke. Okay. There's right-handed and there's correct-handed.
Are there any other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of, or are the offspring keeping you going?
So I've always got some one-shots in the back of my brain. I've got a couple one-shots in the works that I plan on getting at least one of them out before the end of the year. I have my next 100-plus page graphic novel. I have one 100 page graphic novel out called The Loved Ones that mm-hmm. deals with the children of classic movie monsters. So the children of Frankenstein's monster, the children of the Wolfman, children of those kind of things. So, and that's very much a nurture nature story that goes through their quest to find their parents. But I wanted to try to get another 100-page graphic novel out before the end of this year. Gosh, I hope it works. I've got the story written and I've started on some pages. So it's just going to be a matter of me multiplying, not dividing my time. And that's going to be called Leighton Lightspeed. And it's very much a space adventure that deals with the concepts of mortality.
Wow. Wow. And you don't Kickstarter. You do this all yourself.
I don't Kickstarter. I just produce books and hope that people buy them and read them.
Wow. Okay. Obviously, you must sell enough to be able to support moving forward.
I do okay. I still have a day job. I would like to not have a day job, but I do okay. I do okay to be able to print enough books to be able to have physical copies, to be able to take them to stores and be able to take them to cons and things like that. But yeah, I do okay. There's always room for improvement. And I'm working on some things to be able to expand my reach before the end of this year.
Okay, now you brought up cons. That's a good thing. Are you going to cons now? And if so, which ones are you planning to go to this year?
So I'm in a very rural area of upstate New York here. So, and I have, like I said, two children and a day job. So sometimes my options are fairly limited. But there's a couple conventions that I go to up here. One of them is AnchorCon, that is just north of what's called Watertown, New York. If your viewers know where that is. Good for them, because not many people do. But it's a pretty good con, and I do really well. They have a lot of great guests there, and I am lucky enough to be one of the featured artists there. And then there's some smaller cons up here that I go to and then sell some books here and there. But my plan, again, to expand my reach is to be able to find some cons in the area outside of my specific area here that I can start to go to be able to expand my reach.
Okay. I bet you, we've talked about this before. I am big on New York City Comic Con. Mm-hmm. And being that you're in upstate New York, it's still a little ways, but I have friends of mine, and if we end up in Artist Alley at New York Comic Con, we do very well.
Yeah. I have looked into, and not since the pandemic, but I looked into, I wasn't quite ready before the pandemic hit. But now I think that I could probably get a table and do okay and see what happens. So that's something, yes, I'm definitely looking into also.
I know that there is a huge Artist Alley. I've been there, and I always tell the story. We were there selling one of these books, and you know, we never really sell out. We always... You know, the guy whose books we sell, he always is really good at figuring out. But this time we were actually there and we had one of the books and we literally sold out on Sunday.
Nice.
And we had a couple ones that people had rifled through to look and see. And of course, you know, most comic people don't want, they want pristine mm-hmm. mint type stuff. And we had two of them and we put one out and one person came out. Can I buy that one? Okay. Sure. You can buy that one. And then they sold that one. Then we put the other one, which is really beaten up, and we put that one out there. And somebody came along and said they wanted to buy that one.
Nice.
And we were standing there going like, holy mackerel, we've never had this happen to us before.
That's awesome.
We had literally sold even the beaten up ones, the people there wanted. And I think that's something. A lot of people go to New York Comic Con, they're looking for indie comics, and they're looking for interesting reads and stuff like that. So I think you'd do pretty well there if you ever get a chance.
I think I'd do okay. I went to as just to go and enjoy and had an amazing time. Met Joe Kubert and talked to him. Mm-hmm. I have taken many of the courses that he offers through the mail, like many, I'm sure many of the other listeners that you have that are do the same thing I do. But to be able to mm-hmm. sit and talk with him, and there was nobody mm-hmm. else around. I just kind of mm-hmm. kind of hit him right at the beginning, and nobody was there. And he talked to me for a good 20-25 minutes, and wow. It was quite frankly, it was amazing. And yes, being able to walk through Artist Alley is definitely something. To be able to be there and be a part of it is definitely something I'm striving for.
I love their Artist Alley. I really do. I often find people that there that I see at no other conventions mm-hmm. are there, and just really great. But you reminded me of a story though about how I got the very first interview I ever did. I was at Baltimore Comic Con, and David Peterson was mm-hmm. there, who I really love his mouse guard mm-hmm. and stuff. And I wandered around trying to get people. Of course, I had being green, I had not set up anything ahead of time, and like you're supposed to. I had gotten in there. I went up to him and I said, because I love his stuff, but there was nobody talking to him. I said, listen, I really love your stuff. How about if I do an interview? Sure, let's do it. And so we started, and every couple of minutes, somebody would come up and want something, and I'd have to end it, edit it all together. But the thing that was fun was to actually get to do that. And that was my very first one. I learned a lot talking with him about stuff like that. And I've interviewed him several times since then.
Awesome.
But the cons are great ways to make connections,
oh, yeah.
Like you're talking, and do things. We have come out of – I could tell stories all night about that, but I won't bore you with them. But let's just say that a con can also be short for connection mm-hmm. as far as it's a convention.
Yeah, definitely. So. There was a smaller con, very small con who in Utica, New York, about 45 minutes where I am, a little bit more than 45 minutes. And I went there specifically because Ron Mars was there.
Mm.
And I had, the Green Lantern stuff that he did, Superboy he was right. on. Yeah, I could forever you just talk about his work. And he had a couple things signed. He was super nice. And again, I hit it right at the right time. There was nobody standing around him. And I probably scared him a little bit. I kind of like sped walk up to him. But he was so mm-hmm. nice and so cordial. Talked to me for a while about and brought in, other artists that I knew that I was going to kind of do that little sideways shuffle over and talk to after I'd talked to him, but brought mm-hmm. them in to be able to look at some of my work and to talk to me about it. And it was great. Again, another very heavy learning experience that I hope that, every artist or every person in my position could have. And I hope to have more of them.
Mm-hmm. I met him in Florida, mm-hmm. and I talked with him about interviewing him. I ended up interviewing him on the podcast yes. here too. Yes. So he's I often go to conventions to buy comics and action figures and stuff. Now I go specifically to find people to talk with for the podcast.
Yeah, awesome.
Well, David, you're doing wonderful stuff, and I hope to catch up with you maybe at a convention up if I ever head up that your way, because I'm down south, unfortunately, and I'm a little far away from you. But the thing would be fun to catch up and put a face to the to the voice.
Yeah, definitely. I love talking with people through the computers here, but to be able to put faces and shake hands and do all that stuff would be amazing. I would love for that to happen.
Well, keep it up because you're doing wonderful storytelling, and I think we need a lot more of that. So keep it up and keep doing the wonderful stuff.
Dwayne, thank you so much for having me on again. I really appreciate it. It was great talking to you, like always.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.